Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Josh Marks, registration 16953, on behalf of Rancho LLC, the appellant in this case. I would like to reserve, if possible, just 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Sure.
I'll be flexible on that if, you know, the questions are, if I need to answer questions, because I'd much rather do that and address your issues and your questions than simply repeat a few points that may not matter in the end.
Thank you, Mr. Marks.
This case is about what to do with a conservation easement that was granted outside of the chain of title. It was undisputed that it was granted by the wrong owner of the property. The trial court, using some what I think is twisted logic and bending the rules of reformation, ordered that the conservation easement be reformed in this case, and did so. And we asked that the court rectify that error, put this case back to in a situation where reformations are rare, and reformations don't be used just to correct any error that happens in the drafting process. And ask that this court reverse the trial court's grant of summary judgment, and also reinstate, with directions to reinstate, Rancho's summary judgment on that issue.
Now, let me launch right in here, Mr. Marks. Could you address this Oaken case?
Yes,
why doesn't
yes.
that apply?
What I wanted to say was, I think there's really two major issues. One is the issue of reformation, which I'm going to skip over, and I had planned to. And I want to. The second issue, of course, is the Oaken case. How does that play into this situation? The first answer is, I don't think it applies for two substantive reasons and one procedural reason. Okay, and I realize that this is interesting because usually we don't do this on the fly, but since getting the order, we looked a little harder into this issue because it was not raised before in the trial court, in terms of what to do with what appears to be what I consider to be a common law curative rule. Basically saying that if a document is executed by perhaps a fiduciary or a representative, and it's not apparent from the face of the document, if there's no other explanation, the court can assume that it was done in that capacity. I think that's the rule in Oaken. The problem with that is there's a big distinction here. I don't think it applies very well to the LLC context, which is what we're dealing with here. And I can explain. In Oaken, that was a situation that arose out of a trust, right? And there was there were statutes that the court looked at and found that there was no issue in terms of a trustee who signed a conveyance, but didn't identify the trust in the conveyance. And the court applied that rule and said, well, there might be disputed issues. We need to send it back as to intent. But they at least announced the rule, and they indicated that it might apply. In this case, however, there is, at the time that this conservation easement was created, the LLC statute in Colorado required that any conveyance of LLC property be in the name of the LLC. And because of that statutory requirement, that differs from Oaken, because in Oaken there wasn't any statutory bar that precluded that common law rule from operating and curing that error. Whereas in this case, and the statute is at the time of CRS 7-80-408. By way of history, the LLC statute was created in 1990, and it was totally reenacted in 2004, and that provision doesn't exist today. It got moved around and it got softened in 2004. So if you go back to the LLC statute today, it doesn't exist. I have copies. I'm happy to give it to the court or in counsel if you want to look at that old provision. But it existed in 1998 at the time that this conservation easement was enacted. And because of that statutory bar, it creates basically an invalid document. And there's a case that we cited for you in the opening brief called Nile Valley. And it's really analogous to our situation. In Nile Valley, it was a partnership. It wasn't an LLC. But what happened, it was kind of a similar situation in which the deeds of trust were granted, but the property was held in the name of a partnership. The deeds of trust were granted by the partners individually and not the partnership. And at the time that those documents were created, there was a statute, just like in our situation, which said that a partnership property had to be conveyed in the name of a partnership. And so in Nile Valley, this court, 1 year after Okun, said those documents are void because they weren't properly executed. No mention of this Okun rule in that case, but I suspect the explanation is there's a statutory bar, and you can't use this common law curative statute to kind of fill the void or displace that statutory requirement. And that's one of the reasons why Okun doesn't apply in this case. The second reason is it also displaces, and I think you got two colliding concepts here. It displaces really a core concept of the race notice statute, right, which we cited in our brief. In Colorado, right, then the race notice statute does two things. First of all, it gives a potential purchaser notice of what the prior interests are that they may be contending with, and it protects the potential purchaser against unrecorded interests. And when the second thing it does is when that purchaser does look at the chain of title, it allows a purchaser to rely upon the quality of title that it obtains.
Well, let me ask you about that if I can, Mr. Marks.
Sure.
3835109 says an unrecorded instrument is valid against those who took with notice. So why is it inconsistent with the race notice statute? Here, y'all signed the deed. The deed says, I'm taking subject to a conservation easement. It gives you the recording number and the date. Why is that inconsistent?
The deed doesn't say subject to. It just, I mean, when you look at the language, it says there is a conservation easement on this property, effectively. It doesn't say the word subject to. But yes, it does identify that document. But under the race notice statute, when someone goes through the grantor and the grantee index and looks at that document, it was a document that's outside of the chain of title. And our case law says those kinds of documents can be considered wild deeds and can be disregarded.
So you can look at the deed and see it and recognize, oops, they made a mistake, and then say, gotcha? I mean, that's troubling to me. I mean, you're told where to find it. You could look at it, and you say you could ignore it then. How is that equitable? When you sign a deed that says the subject property is encumbered by this conservation easement, it describes all of it and all the parties, and then you could say after you take it, that was void, gotcha. How is that equity?
Yeah, because just like any other interest that's out there, someone is entitled to look at the validity of that interest.
Mr. March.
And so what if it was a completely, what if it was someone who fictitiously granted an interest? And my client went and said, that entity just doesn't even exist at all. I'm going to disregard it. It's functionally in the same boat. It put my client on notice that there was a conservation easement out there. He looked at it and concluded, it's outside the chain of title. There's a problem here. And that doesn't, I don't think the equitable considerations fall on his side. I think the equitable considerations are really for him in this case, because when you look at the equity surrounding this conservation easement, this is in the record, that the most basic thing that should have been done when this conservation easement was granted was not, and that was the land trust never looked at any evidence of ownership when it took this conservation easement. Yep.
Mr. Marks, your brief is predicated on the assumption that under the race notice recording statute that all we have to do is look at the grantor-grantee index, and that dictates the result. But of course, there are exceptions, like actual notice or inquiry notice, in terms of adverse possession. There are issues that may arise that are not based on the grantor-grantee index. So doesn't the statutory scheme contemplate other circumstances than just looking at the grantor-grantee index?
Well, except that the problem is the race notice statute gives you the roadmap by which an interest gets conveyed. And if the interest was, you know, if this conservation easement wasn't granted by the right party, it doesn't matter whether it was recorded, whether it was handed to my client, the same result has to ensue. If it's an invalid document, that's the problem with this case. By reforming the case, we argued that the result would wreak havoc with the race notice statute, because you're going to end up in situations where there are breaks in the chain of title, and there's really no way to understand whether that break is a result of an innocent mistake of someone in a representative capacity, and it's going to upset, you know, the ability to look at something and say this is merchantable title or not. It's going to require investigation and quiet title suits to rectify stuff like this. That's the problem with it.
Well, you also indicated in your brief, if I remember correctly, that Mr. Walker intended to convey the conservation easement in his own name rather than in the name of the LLC.
Yes, there's evidence in the record to support that.
But at the same time, the statutory scheme requires that conservation easements be imposed by or given by the record title owner. So how is it possible that Mr. Walker in his own name could have granted a conservation easement?
Through complete inadvertence and lack of attention to his ownership. This isn't in the record, but we took Mr. Walker's deposition, and it was stunning. I mean, he owns a number of LLCs and owns a number of properties in Colorado. Basically said, I don't remember any of this. I have handlers who just hand me documents, and I sign this stuff, and away it goes. So there are alternative explanations. We never got a chance to get into motive, which has to do with the Okun rule in terms of other alternative explanations, because it really wasn't before us in the case. And you know, at the very least, what I do ask of this court is, if you think this Okun rule applies, and I don't think it does, at the very least, that line of cases, if anything, relates to the declaratory judgment aspect of this case, which the trial court never ruled on. It doesn't have anything to do with reformation, because if you apply the Okun rule, the deed's good as is, right? You don't need to reform it. But we're here on a reformation case, and so it seems to me that that can't be decided. This case and this appeal can't be decided under the Okun rule, because there's a mismatch between that line of authority and what the trial court decided.
You've just passed your 2-minute mark, just reminding you.
Well, I would ask, if the panel has any questions on the reformation side, I'm certainly eager to answer them. But I believe it's very clear that the trial court, logic, first of all, misapplied the key component of reformation. The most important thing about a reformation case is that the parties had an antecedent agreement, and this is on a mutual mistake theory. That the parties had actually agreed to the term to be reformed. And the problem with the trial court's conclusion in this case is that she never found that. She inferred it, but there was no evidence to support that. In fact, the evidence supported the contrary. The problem was the land trust in this case had no idea the LLC was in the transaction. They admitted that. Their files and the evidence in the record supported that. In order for reformation to have occurred, to allow the LLC to be substituted for Mr. Walker, the land trust had to have known that the LLC intended to deed this conservation easement to it, and Mr. Walker intended to do it as well. but there was a mistake in the actual drafting of the conservation easement. Well, that didn't happen here, and that's why, and because there was no mutual intent, that is why reformation is inapplicable in this case.
Mr. Marks, you've used your time, but I'm going to ask you two more questions, and I'm going to give Mr. Ramey a little bit more time, too.
Sure.
Factual question. Was there anything in the record as to when Rancho learned of the mistake regarding the grantor? Did they learn before they took the conveyance, or do you know?
It's not in the record. It was really afterwards. There was a title commitment, which kind of put my client, it focused my client that there might be an issue. He then looked into it in more detail after the conveyance.
All right, but it was not in the record either way.
It's not.
Fair enough. And one other question, and again, I'm going to give Mr. Ramey some additional time. You talked about that they had an obligation and they were essentially negligent for not doing their homework, the other side, and figuring out the issue.
Right.
What do you do with the Carpenter case, I think is a Supreme Court case, says the negligence won't preclude a reformation, you know, party's negligence. And how is that distinguishable?
Well, I don't think negligence is the standard by which reformation is granted or not granted. I'll grant you that. I mean, usually the discussion about negligence comes up when one party is ignorant of the facts and another party has the intent to have said something else. And that's usually where it comes into play. And I think that applies here because the land trust was ignorant of the fact that the LLC was not the owner. But that plays more towards the fact that reformation shouldn't have been granted than should have been granted.
Understood. Thank you very much, Mr. Marks. And if I can ask the bailiff to go ahead and give Mr. Ramey, make it 17 minutes, call it even. Thank you.
May it please the court, Edward Ramey, number 6748, on behalf of the Appalee Colorado Cattlemen's Agricultural Land Trust. I guess let me just begin right where we left off, and that is there anything in the record that suggests that Rancho knew about the existence of this conservation easement before it received its own warranty deed to the property from the Walker 1 Granby LLC? There is. It's pretty clearly Mr. Ed Orr, who was the principal of Rancho, had discussions both in the spring of 2011 and in the fall of 2011 prior to the conveyance with both the Cattlemen's Land Trust directly and with Mr. Walker regarding the existence of this conservation easement and its impact. And I could refer the court to the record pages 352 and 54, particularly item number 10, which is a stipulated fact in the case below, which is just simply deemed irrelevant by Rancho. But they were well aware of it, and as I think Judge Talman stated, it was already, or maybe Judge Gabriel, you cited it, but it was in prominently stated in their own deeds. So
let me ask you on that, Mr. Ramey. My question, I think, was a little more specific. I think the evidence is clear. They had some notice that there was an easement. I was curious whether there's anything in the record as to whether they knew there was a mistake, that there was an error, that the grantor was wrong before they took the deed.
And that I don't know. They knew of the easement. One would think they must have known that the grantor was misidentified as well, but there's nothing specific in the record
Thank
about
you.
That. The moving to the Oaken case, and by the way, I do have to express some, I guess, chagrin on my own part that the court finds cases that are directly relevant to the facts of the case. Neither counsel, particularly I, had been able to locate, so I apologize to the court for that. This happens altogether too often. The Oaken case, I think, is directly on point, particularly since a member of the panel wrote it. I realize you're very familiar with it. As I understand the Oaken case, it addresses the fact that if an individual who has signed or has entered into an instrument, signed an instrument, has no interest in the property, and the property is solely held in an entity in which that individual holds a representative capacity, the instrument will be deemed to have been executed in a representative capacity. And by the way, there's a statute to that effect too, 3834102, which I think follows directly along with regard to signatures, the point of the Okun case. The meeting of the minds in this case, the agreement that existed, I will represent to the court, is clear from the record that a conservation easement, that the deed, with regard to the deed of conservation, the conservation easement would be conveyed by a party that had the capacity to convey the conservation easement. The record owner of the property, the party that had that capacity, was Walker One Grandy LLC. That was wholly owned, except for 1%. It was wholly owned by Mr. Walker, the 1% by his wife. It was managed at all times solely and completely by Mr. Walker. Clearly, it was Mr. Walker's intent to convey this conservation easement in the capacity that he had where he could convey it, which was in the representative capacity on behalf of his LLC. And that was certainly the intention of the Cattlemen's Land Trust to receive the conservation easement from an entity that had the capacity to convey that interest in property to it, and not from somebody else. There was a suggestion in the record below that no, the prior agreement, I think we heard a little bit today as well, was something else. It was to between the land trust and Mr. Walker to engage in some kind of an agreement between them that could not possibly have resulted in the conveyance of the land trust. The district court found that completely illogical. In other words, that the parties had agreed for some reason to create a wild deed. I would second the district court's conclusion that that is completely illogical interpretation of the facts in the agreement. Now, a mistake was made in the drafting of the deed of conservation easement. There's no question about it. It was a mistake made on both sides, clearly negligent on both sides, and I would respectfully submit to the court that that is exactly what reformation is about. Don't have reformation unless somebody has made a mistake. And both sides did, in fact, make a mistake in the drafting here. The point of the reformation was to correct that. There are exceptions to the reformation doctrine, one of which is if you're trying to create a wholly new agreement, do something totally different from what the original agreement was all about. And I think an example of that would be the Colorado Mountain case that was filed as supplemental authority, where the parties entered in clearly into a 20-year lease, and now one of the parties is saying, well, it's not really a 20-year lease, it's a 3-year lease. No, it was a 20-year lease. You can't change the agreement. But the agreement in this case was clearly to convey a valid conservation easement, which would require that the party with the capacity to do so would be the party conveying it. Another exception, and a great deal of the argument below and here today, is on notice, the notice provisions. Particularly a good faith bona fide purchaser for value or somebody giving value without notice cannot be prejudiced by mistakes made by parties earlier in the chain of title. The Nile Valley case that was cited, by the way, is an example of that sort of thing, where there the party without notice was statutorily without notice because it was a bankruptcy trustee under 11 U.S.C. Section 544. They get to come in for a lot of good federal bankruptcy reasons, irrespective of any notice. But if a party is on notice, reformation can take place, and there's no bar to that. And Rancho, in this case, is anything but a party without notice. As the court has already noted, first off, Rancho had actual notice, clear actual notice, and as the court noted, under the race notice statute 3835109, even unrecorded instruments are considered valid against a grantee if the grantee has actual notice or has notice, and this grantee had actual notice. Secondly, in terms of the constructive and inquiry notice issues, as the panel has also noted, the existence of the conservation easement, first off, the deed of conservation easement was itself recorded. There was a Scrivener's error in misidentifying the grantor, but it indeed was recorded. It was referenced in a recital in the very deed by which Ranch O obtained title to the property from Walker One Granby LLC. It was referenced prominently.
So, Mr. Ramey, is your position that since that deed was in the conveyance, that they had a, that Ranch O had an obligation not only to be aware of that, but to realize that, that there had been a mutual mistake in the original conservation easement?
I think, I would suggest, Your Honor, that at the point it received its deed, irrespective even of the actual notice that preceded that, Ranch O was on constructive notice that a deed of conservation easement was being recited as encumbering this property. At a minimum, that was inquiry notice to go look up the deed of conservation easement, the recording information for which was recited on the face of the deed as well. Now, were they also on notice that there was a Scrivener's error in that deed? I would guess that would be the logical conclusion they would reach at that point, but it doesn't matter. They could determine that very quickly by looking at the deed itself. It was the recital was there for them to see, and it was clear that there was an intent to convey this conservation easement with regard to the property that it was requiring, that it was acquiring. I would also suggest to the panel that of all the issues about whether unrecorded instruments and recorded instruments that are outside the chain of title because of a Scrivener's error or misidentification at this point, of all the cases and statutes that discuss those, one proposition is very clear, and we cited it in our brief, the commentator Reeves, that a fortiori, a grantee is bound by recitals in the very document by which it obtains its interest or title in the property. The Page versus Fees Cray case, which establishes the common law, both the majority and the dissent in that opinion would agree with that. The majority would say, and did say, that a grantee takes subject to recitals in all instruments that are recorded in its chain of title. The dissent and the curative statute, 3835108, is a little bit narrower than that. And it would say that a recital to an instrument that is unrecorded, remember ours is recorded even, but to an instrument that is unrecorded binds only the parties to that particular instrument. So the recital in the deed to Ranch O, if it binds anybody, and taking the narrowest view, binds the parties to that conveyance, which would be Ranch O. Ranch O took subject to that recital. So, Your Honors, again, I think reformation was appropriate in this case. The facts are fairly clear that a mistake was made. We're trying to correct it. There is no prejudice whatsoever to Ranch O. They were fully on notice of the existence of the conservation easement and its terms. They could look it up. They had the recording information. They took subject to it due to the recital in the very deed by which they took title to the property. The idea that a different agreement was somehow reached to create some sort of a wild deed between the parties, I think the district court was absolutely correct in politely calling it completely illogical. We request the court to affirm the district court, which did grant us reformation in the case.
Thank you, Mr. Ramey.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Marks, I gave Mr. Ramey 30 more seconds than you had. If you'd like to take the last word, I'm going to give you those 30 seconds.
I do want to make one point in the Okun line of cases. Both the case it relies on, Bennett v. Laws, and in Okun, there were documents in the real estate records, recorded real estate records, showing the representative capacity. There is a document filed by the trustee of a statement of authority before the conveyance in question was made. In the Bennett case, there was a power of attorney that was executed by the person who executed the deeds in Bennett v. Law. So there was something in the real estate records, in the Chinese title, that someone could connect the dots. In our situation, that doesn't exist. There's nothing in the chain of title that puts Rancho on notice that an LLC is involved or that Mr. Walker has the authority to execute it on behalf of an LLC. That's the one thing I want to leave you with.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. I appreciate it. Mr. Marks, Mr. Ramey, I want to thank you both for your excellent arguments in this case. I want to thank all counsel for their excellent arguments and briefing in this case. They are helpful to the court. As I will sometimes do, I also want to comment particularly on the professionalism that I saw from all counsel in this case. We don't always see it. It's a breath of fresh air when we do, and the court very much appreciates it. The matter will be taken under advisement. A written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes our arguments calendar for this morning. So the court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.